Welcome to the Every Day is Saturday podcast, the number one motivation show on the planet.
No more Mondays for you. It's time to make every day Saturday.
This is the podcast where we help you to accept who you are, not where you are.
On the roller coaster of life, you know we only sit in the front seat, champion. So make sure you are fastened in. Hi. Let's go.
Tired of feeling run down all the time during the week? We can help you make every day feel like it's a Saturday.
Let's go pack your bags. It's time to leave Averageville.
Introducing the man who thinks abnormal stands for above normal.
When you're on fire, people will travel from miles around to watch you burn, baby. We are fired up.
The host of the Every Day is Saturday show, Sam Crowley.
What is up, champion Sam Crowley? September 21st. It's a Wednesday. Every day that ends in Y is your day. Got kind of a deep show for you today. You're thinking, dude, you're about as shallow as the baby pool. What are you talking about? I know. But I just want to share with what's on my heart this morning. I think it's going to really inspire you. That was such a weak-ass sentence. I know that this show is going to inspire you. So, hey, today's show brought to you by your dream. It wants you to go for it, okay? So get up and go for it. Love all the emails coming my way, Twitter, Facebook messages on the fan page. Make sure you're you like the page, facebook.com/everydayissaturday. facebook.com/everydayissaturday. We're about to rally in a big, big way. We're about to ratchet up the movement. Big, big things coming your way over the weekend. Make sure you're on my mailing list. Go to everydayissaturday.com. Put in your name and email. Make sure you're notified what we got launching this weekend. You are going to love it. Hint, it's going to be awesome. Coping mechanisms. By the way, PS, disclaimer, coming your way. I am not a psychiatrist. I am not a psychologist. I am not any ist. I am just a dude who went for his dream 10 years ago, lives the most imperfect life you'll probably find of any human being out there. I love God. I love my kids. I love my wife. Have I screwed all three of those up? In probably the biggest way possible. Have I lost it with my kids? Have I yelled? Have I screamed? I absolutely swore. Can't even count how many times. I'm a human being. Does it mean I don't get up the next day and try hard to be better? Absolutely, I do. You have four girls, and you tell me how you don't pull your hair out. I'm sitting there last night. My daughter says, Daddy, you're bald. I'm like, I don't think I am. I can feel my hair. She goes, no, on the top. I'm staring down at your head. You're bald. Okay, thanks a lot. Anything else you got going on for me today, Paigey? But kids are great, man. Kids are great. But it's a coping mechanisms. Let's talk about it in business, struggles you have, relationships, struggles you have, this exterior you may or may not have formed based on who you are and where you've been. You know, our experiences shape us. You know that. Even the basic of, you know, knowledge about human behavior is our past experiences shape how we are, what we see, how we view the world, whether you're black, whether you're white, whether you're Asian. Get on Twitter right now, September 21st, and just search Black Lives Matter. Search the individual who was happened to be killed in Charlotte last night, African-American. Terrence Crutter, if I'm saying that correctly, Cutter or Cruddy, my apologies, 2 days ago. That individual shot down when his car broke down in the middle of the road. And this isn't even a political show. I'm just saying, if you want to see how people view the world, get on Twitter, because that really is a lens into the world about how white people might view the world, how black people view the world, how people on the other side of the world view the world. And our experiences in life shape us, and yet we judge so much. And look, I got both hands in the air as usual. I work so hard to try to see, and this is tough for me, man, because I grew up in a single parent family. I try to see what I want to finish that last sentence. I try so hard to see both sides of every situation now. I try so hard. But growing up in the environment I did, small town, Bradford, Pennsylvania, I don't think I could have grown up in a better town. The town loved me because I had seven older brothers and sisters that were there before I got there. We moved there in 1964. My dad was a professor at the University of Pittsburgh, and they have the University of Pittsburgh at Bradford. And one of our many relocations, I wasn't even born until 1968. We moved there in 64. But as my older brothers and sisters tell the story, I mean, we moved all over the country. We moved from New York to Arizona to Indiana, back to New York. I don't know of all my seven brothers and sisters if any of them were even born in the same city. I think my brother was oldest brother, who's 17 years older. I think he was born in South Bend, Indiana. Or was that my sister? God, I can't even remember. One was born, yeah, all over the place, man. All over the place. Because we're like nomads, gypsies, going from, you know, living with different people, living out of hotels. And we finally got to Bradford in 64. And I was born in 68. And then my dad left 3 months after I was born. And that's it. That's my life experience. The lens that I view the world, at least I have through the first 48 years, is through that of a child that was raised by a single alcoholic parent. You know, and that's not a shot at my mom at all. She did the best she could with the hand that she had dealt to her. But, you know, there were many nights where I had two choices. I could go to my room and shut the door to get away from my mom, who was, you know, pretty nasty drunk. I mean, if you've ever been around a nasty drunk, then you know. Or I go to a friend's house, and that was my refuge. One of the two. Now I say that, and I always put the disclaimer out there. My mom died in 97. At the age of 69, she died of a heart attack just sitting in our living room, smoking a cigarette, watching Wheel of Fortune, whatever was on the TV at the time. And I felt bad for her because she got the bad end of this. She got the raw end of a deal in life, man. But you don't really get to choose that much. I mean, sure, she had choices, have kids, don't have kids, get married, don't get married. But by and large, I forgave her for everything, you know, for, you know, those nights where I didn't know. Like, she would come up the stairs. We lived in this old Victorian drafty house in Bradford. And Bradford got cold in the wintertime. We had the house where the frost was on the inside of the windows. Okay? You know what I'm talking about? And you talk about single pane, double pane. Some windows didn't even have a pane. Okay? The house sold for $4,000 in 1987 when we moved out of it. But I would hear her coming up the stairs at night. And it would be like, and it would be just a slow, methodical. I was like, oh, God, please get to the top of the stairs. Please get down the hall to your room. And there was some nights, more than one occasion, she would fall backwards all the way down the stairs, at least to the landing. I'm like, oh, Lord Jesus. And, you know, this is a 50-year-old lady falling backwards drunk down the stairs. There was a time I was sleeping. I was in the eighth grade. And I hear Sam, Jimmy. My older brother Jim was a senior, and I was in eighth grade. And I woke up. I thought, it's like one of those things, you think you're dreaming. You're hearing these voices, Sam, Jimmy. I went down, and it's 2 a.m. I'm in the eighth grade. It's a weeknight. And my mom can't move. She had fallen asleep in the chair drinking, tried to get up, and broke her hip. Broke your hip. Of all things, that's how brittle she was. So the ambulance came. I had to dial 911, 13 years old, and the ambulance came to take her away. And that was it. Mom's gone at the hospital. I don't know what to do. I can't even remember who I called, what time I called. I don't even know. But when it's funny. We live so close. Bradford's such a small town. As soon as I put the phone down from calling 911, I hear the siren for the ambulance. Like, literally, that's two blocks away. And those are my life experiences up until I left the house and went off to college. I didn't even apply to college until February of my senior year. Imagine that. You know, now you see kids, they're taking ACTs in their sophomore year of high school. They are doing college visits all throughout their sophomore or junior year. I'm like, 1985, 86 was my senior year. I didn't even apply to a college until February, and I applied to Penn State only because that's where all, you know, most of my family went. We were living in Pennsylvania, and I didn't even get into main campus in State College. I ended up going to Barron College in Erie, PA. Thank God they even took me, and that was a joke. I didn't even take college that seriously. You know, partied a lot, lasted 4 semesters, and then moved to Florida, and the story goes on from there. My point being, whatever your life experiences are, you probably need to work hard to view life through a different lens or be successful. Maybe you were raised by a single parent. Maybe you suffered abuse at the hands of somebody who you really trusted. Maybe, you know, you grew up without any money whatsoever. Or maybe you grew up in a life of privilege, which, you know, sometimes is a hell of a lot worse because you have a lens of the world which is completely warped. Probably maybe a sense of entitlement. Maybe, you know, you were given a car at 16, a nice brand new car. You went off to college. Mom and dad paid for it, gave you a credit card, and, you know, you didn't really have to want for much, and then you were just left out to slaughter when you had to enter the real world and figure it out for yourself. Whatever it is, coping mechanisms that you used, at least this is the case for me, make up who I am still at the age of 48. And I need to fight every single day. I love the coping mechanisms that I developed as a young child because that's what got me through going to the friend's house, locking myself in my room, watching TV all night until what I would say the coast is clear, you know, was safe to go downstairs. And sometimes when I thought it was safe to go downstairs, you still couldn't go downstairs. I remember New Year's Eve, 1980, I think, New Year's Eve, 1980, my mom, I think, had some people over, and then they left, and it was 8 a.m. the next day, and she was still drinking. Can you imagine that? So it was the coast still wasn't clear to go down there. And so I remember these things. And again, I say all this as I was raised because I felt very bad for my mom. Like I said, the hand that she got dealt. But I also understood at an early age that I needed to figure out a way to just make the best of that day. That helps me out a lot now. I still go inside. I still put up this really hard shell, this exterior, when adversity hits me. For example, when we lost our baby boy, Matthew, in 2000, he was delivered early at 20 weeks, and, you know, he lived for 4 hours. We had to have him baptized right there in the hospital room and give him back to the nurses, and his heart stopped beating just a few hours later. Next day, I went golfing with my father-in-law, got drunk all day, played golf while Angela recovered, and she was with her mom that day. And that's how I dealt with it, just to get away, just to escape the moment. It was like I was 12 years old all over again. Something bad was happening. When our baby Susan was born at 24 weeks, I got a little bit better with that. I had to face it head on. I remember the doctor. I remember when Susan was born via C-section. I was there in the operating room with Angela, and then they whisked her off into a holding area, and I went off into the holding area with a doctor. And I'm just looking at this baby struggling to breathe, and he's like, yeah, we don't know. It's literally minute by minute, and we'll just keep you posted. We'll do the best we can. We'll do the best we can. And I was like, holy cow, what do I do with this? But I said, I need to be there now. I'm a dad. I'm not just a 12-year-old kid. I have responsibilities. I got to be there for my wife. I got to explain this to my three daughters who don't understand any of this and what's going on. And I remember when I went to the NICU for the first time, a couple hours later, they said, are you ready to go see your baby daughter? I'm like, thinking to myself, no. And I said, yep, let's go. And I just plowed in there. And I remember walking down the hallway with the doctor. And you go through these double doors, and you stop, and they got two wash basins. You got to wash your hands. Then you need to sanitize your hands. And then you go through another set of double doors, and they got all these pods set up. And it's like the most sanitary. It's supposed to be the most sanitary place in that zip code. And I remember walking in, and I'm like, dear Lord, please give me the strength to look at this baby. Please. Because a baby at 24 weeks does not look like a baby at 40 weeks. And you know what I'm talking about. So I walk in, and thank God Laura Conley was the nurse. Laura's become a really great friend of our family. She's the very first person I saw. And she goes, your daughter is just beautiful. And I'm like, wow. I go, where is she? And she showed her to me, and she was wrapped. My baby, Susan, was wrapped in this bubble wrap and on top of a blanket, and she was intubated with a ventilator down her throat, and all these monitors are beeping. And I go, look, I broke down. I started just sobbing in the NICU. I go, I don't know what to do. And that's not me. I'd never done that. My coping mechanism was always to have all the answers, to be strong, not to be vulnerable, just, you know, pretend like nothing bothered me ever since I was a kid. And when I opened up like that, Laura was, so awesome. She showed me what each monitor meant, how to read it, which would come to be the joke because she goes, stop watching the monitors. Like every day then, I would be like, hey, why'd that go down to 88? Why'd it go to 72? Where are we at? She goes, okay, don't look at the screen. Look at the baby. That became the joke. don't look at the screen, Dad. Look at the baby. My wife would always look at Susan, and I would always be reading the monitor and anything to beat. What's that? But that morning, she showed me, that afternoon rather, she showed me what every monitor meant. She told me where we were, didn't give me any guarantees that Susan would live, but just said, we will do the best we can and we will love your baby when you're not here. I'm like, man, that's all I need to hear. And I remember then I had to leave there, compose myself, and go back and tell my wife what I had just saw, you know, how the baby's doing and all that. And, you know, I started to experience something when Susan was born that I never really experienced before in my life. And that was being more vulnerable, not having to have all the answers, being a little, I guess, softer, really opened up another lens to my world. You know, and I mentioned different things that are going on in our society now, whether it's political, whether it's race related. 10 years ago, if I would have been on Twitter and all this stuff was flying around, I would have been engaged in a different way, in a worse way. Like, I would have been taking one side. I would have been judging, prejudging everybody out there. I would have been saying words and salty language and out there feeling good about it, insulting people for what they believe because it's not what I believe. And life experiences have, I've allowed life experiences to really shape me more as a person. I want to love more. I want to understand more. Of course, I want to have just all that life has to offer, but I understand I'm not going to have everything because nobody has everything. Do you know what I mean? Like, most people, they make $1 million, they want $10 million. Most people make $10 million, want $100 million. Very few people are satisfied with their health, with the love of the people that they have around them. Very few people are, you know, have significance, have purpose, have meaning. And all of that, for example, this launch that I have coming up this weekend, and by the way, if you're listening to this podcast and it's not this week or this weekend, you can, at any time, I'm going to give you the link over the weekend, and you'll always have the link moving forward in the next week or so, but you'll always have an opportunity to connect in this, inside this academy, and all the bonuses and the live event and everything that I'm doing. But we search for significance. That's all I've ever wanted, significance. You know, I wanted purpose to my life. I wanted meaning to my life. It's the whole reason I started this Every Day is Saturday. I didn't even have a dollar amount in mind. You know, I just, like, God, lead me to where I need to go. And that's another thing I've really struggled with. You know, this isn't a faith-based podcast, but you know, I'm a Christian. I believe in God. I believe in Jesus Christ. I believe in the Holy Spirit, the Holy Trinity. But I've sucked at that most of my life. You know, I've sucked at being a great representative of everything that God wants me to be. And I've been meeting with a pastor regularly on a weekly basis to help me understand that the Bible is the absolute truth, that I need to be more Christ-like, that I need to walk in that faith. Now, whatever your faith is, that's not the point of what I'm trying to make right now. The point I'm trying to make right now is that coping mechanism that I've always had. And I'm just sharing this with you because I felt led to share this. All right, this isn't about, oh, Sam Crowley, but it is my podcast, so I guess I can share this at that level. I would love your feedback as well at Sam Crowley on Twitter. Hit me up on email about how this show resonated with you. Because I could do a show very easily, rah, 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 motivate, motivate, rah, rah, rah. But at some point, man, you got to be authentic. You got to be real. The problem with most people in my space, and I would say just about everybody, you have to be somewhat narcissistic to be one of these motivational gurus. I don't want to be that person. Never one time. When I launched Every Day Saturday, like I was saying before, I never did it because I wanted this amount of money. I didn't even know how much money you could make. I just wanted to get a message out that you don't have to settle. That was basically my message when I launched the show 10 years ago. You don't have to settle. There are no wrong answers. There's just experiences that you can develop over the course of your life. There are no wrong answers. And when you approach life like that, like, there are no wrong answers. Should I speak to this person or should I speak to that person? Yes. Should I build a landing page or should I create a video? Yes. There's no wrong answers. We get so petrified of failing as if that's a bad thing. It's experience that you're going to gain in order to grow. For me, I wanted to grow. Publicly, I wanted to create a show that would inspire others. Privately, I wanted to change the person I was from this hardened corporate ass, ego, megalomaniac, narcissist, always being right, not losing my edge, though, of being a passionate person to inspire people. I mean, that's my gift. I know that's my gift. And I've been so fortunate enough to understand very few people understand what their real natural gift in life. And then the ones that do understand what that gift is are afraid to use that gift and celebrate that gift. And that's powerful. I mean, that's a real thing. You need to understand that whatever your gift is, you need to know that's your gift. You need to share that gift. You don't ask why, okay? You know, why do I have the gift of photography? Why do I have the gift of singing? Why do I have the gift of inspiration? Why do I have the gift of technology, of lawn care, whatever? That's your gift. Now, you need to get that message and that gift out to as many people as possible. And you need to seek mentorship. But you need to lose and leave behind that individual who you do not like being. And maybe some of the coping mechanisms that you have developed over the course of your life because of how you were raised as a child, because of the experience that you have, maybe you need to look at those and say, are they helping me or are they hurting me? They've helped me in certain situations. They hurt me in others. For me, the coping mechanisms that I developed as a child that were taking me all the way through my 20s and my 30s, they helped me tremendously in the corporate world because I never gave a crap about anything really other than what I've just tunnel vision about sales quotas, getting promoted, all of that stuff. They helped my career immensely, almost killed my marriage, killed my family relationships with my kids because it really was non-existent. I was so focused on the corporate world. But they helped me in a lot of other ways. They helped me keep my family in a nice home, protect them financially. We did very well. But now, as I moved into my 40s, and I've been doing this every day of Saturday and speaking and online sales and this podcast, I do as often as I possibly can do it. And it's none of it is edited. Not one word is ever edited on this show. You can practically tell that from the first second you tune in. I don't want to edit the show. I want you to feel what is coming through your earbuds. I want you to feel what's coming through your computer right now. Just the raw, authentic message that if I can do it, you can do it. That if I can just get started with a little audio in 2005, 2006, it started with just a couple of downloads. It turned into now a couple hundred thousand with no advertising. I do zero promotion for the show. Somehow you found it. And I don't even think that's a coincidence that you and I are now connected through the power of this podcast. And the coping mechanism, I'm willing to now let go because I'm different at 48 than I was at 8 years old. But that still, that scared little kid comes out of me. That insecure little kid comes out in me. And when we meet at a live event, I'll take you through exactly the exercises to harness the power of who you are. When you come inside the new academy that we're going to be relaunching in a few days right now, you'll be able to see how to harness the power and celebrate the uniqueness, which is you and your message. But never lose that authenticity that you have. It's okay to develop new coping mechanisms because you're at a different stage in your life than you were 5 or 10 years ago. And maybe you don't need to be that hardened, rough exterior that you used to be. I would always encourage people, to take the other side of the argument, take the other side of the situation, look at it through the lens that they are looking at it from, okay? One of the best feedbacks I had was a podcast I did with Joseph McClendon maybe a month or so ago, and we talked about Black Lives Matter. He's an African-American. He's been with Tony Robbins, 20 years or so. I got to get him back on the show because I've been texting him, and we just haven't been able to connect, but that was a great show. Because he's somebody that looks at it from a completely different lens. However, he and I have a lot in common. You know, we both speak. We're both in that space. We both create products and just have a lot in common. The one thing we don't have in common is the color of our skin, which is kind of odd when you think of 1/16th of an inch the layer of skin, how much that separates people and how much that distinguishes their life and their experiences. And we can't see life through a lens of somebody else because of a 16th of an inch. Isn't that crazy? Just think about what separates your view from somebody else's view. A lot of the time, it's going to be paper thin. It's going to be something you're going to be looking at and say, wow, that's all that separates that. Unbelievable. So, coping mechanisms was the title of today's show. We went a lot of different directions. I wanted to be as vulnerable as I, even more vulnerable than usual today, because I just felt led to be that way. I hope today's show resonated with you. We'll be back and better than ever tomorrow, maybe even later today. Who knows? But I just want you to kind of think about how has the person that you've been over the last 10 to 15 to 20 years shaped the way you view the world? Does it make you more angry? Does it make you less trusting? Does it make you a little bit anxious? How do you reverse all three of those? How do you become more trustworthy of people, more positive, more secure, less anxious, more excited? And also, when are you going to take your unique gift, and when are you going to get that message out? Not caring what people think, because you're going to be judged. You will be judged. That comes with the territory. But that doesn't matter. You're searching for the lives that need to be changed. Are you with me? I hope the show resonated with you. It's Sam Crowley. Make sure, like I mentioned earlier, you're on my email list at everydaysaturday.com. Let me know how the show hit you today. What'd you like best about it? Hit me up on Twitter or send me an email, sam@everydayissaturday.com. Hit us up on the fan page, Facebook.com/everydayissaturday. Have the best day ever.
Thank you for listening to the Every Day is Saturday podcast. Still fired up and want more of Sam Crowley? Be sure to visit everydayissaturday.com. And don't forget to follow Sam on Twitter @SamCrowley. Let Sam know you're listening. Use #EveryDayIsSaturday.